The following programming is sponsored by Doreen Taylor Music, LLC. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
What's going on?
Hey, America, what's going on? Welcome to The Scene with Doreen. I'm your host, Doreen Taylor, and I'm setting the scene every week to help you find out what's happening in music, TV, movies, sports, the arts, and everything in between. I'm proud to be syndicated on stations coast to coast and originating right here in the city of brotherly love on Philadelphia's number one talk radio station, Talk 860 WWDB. You can get insider access and go behind the scene on our show's official website, thescenewithdoreen.com, and watch us every week on the nationally syndicated television show, The Daily Flash, available in every major city in the United States. And today's show is proud to be presented in part by Wish Upon a Wedding, the nationwide charity that grants weddings and vow renewals for couples facing terminal illness or life-altering health circumstances. Visit wishuponawedding.org to apply or to make a donation to help bring joy to a much-deserving couple. And it's a new week again! These are going by so fast, and the summer is going by so fast. So while I still have the time, I'm going to welcome my great producer, Matt Menark. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Doreen. I'm not going anywhere in the summer. I don't melt away.
No, I do, because it's getting really hot. It's a little too
hot.
It is.
It is really hot out.
That's what's going on right now.
Why are you squinting?
Why
are you squinting at those papers? I thought... Do you need glasses?
I have glasses, but I don't wear them.
Why?
Ever. I don't like the way they make me look, so I kind of... I know, since I do a lot...
But do you like the way they make you see?
Sometimes, no. I don't want to see things sometimes. You know, when you're around, people are like, oh, they're so much better looking when they're blurry. And then, you know, I'm not saying you, Matt, in particular.
Thanks. I mean, I'll turn off the lights or something.
But no, you got me. You got my Achilles heel there. I am. That is my kryptonite. I cannot really see. I used to have 20/20 vision. And then, I don't know, something over the years, not age, because it was really fast. And all of a sudden, I'm like, I can't see. I can still kind of see close. I'm not really great far. I can drive in the day, but God forbid at night. Look out. Here I come.
Did it happen sometime around the eclipse?
The eclipse.
Did you stare at the eclipse?
No. And we had two of them, right? In a few years there.
Did you stare at both of them?
No, I didn't. I actually... Yeah, I got to say, I did look up there, but this last one we had, we were in Philadelphia, so there was nothing to see.
No.
It got so cloudy right before, and then the clouds moved out right after. It was like, it was jinxed. And I'm from Buffalo, New York originally, and they had one of the best views that, you know, you could possibly have.
Yeah, that's
and they
true.
Got ridiculous cloud cover. I said, poor Buffalo, they're always screwed. They got the no goal, the wide to the right, the no goal, and now we had the clouds on an eclipse, you know, major life event. So poor Buffalo.
Yeah, I'm sure
all you
Bills fans would rather have no... You'd rather one of those field goals make it or one of those four Super Bowls than the eclipse.
Jim Kelly just making one more completion and Scotty Norwood. You know what? I always tell people when they ask what my life is like, I said, watch Ace Ventura. Just, you know, Ray Finkel and Laces Out. And that's my life right there. That's my... I'm still hoping. I'm still an eternal optimist about the Super Bowl. That could be a whole other show about just my sadness of being from Buffalo.
Your existence as a Buffalonian, is that what it is?
Buffalonian, yeah, you're right.
Okay.
Look at you. You could be just moving up there and you'd fit right in. Do you like wings?
Cool down here.
Do you like buffalo wings? We don't call them buffalo wings, though. They're chicken wings because buffalo seems redundant to call them buffalo wings in Buffalo. So, yeah.
Yeah, just like I'm sure Chinese people don't call it Chinese food. They just call it food. When you want some food.
But how do you take them? Do you like them hot, mild, suicidal?
It depends on the mood. Sometimes I like the dry rub, like the garlic parmesan. Sometimes I like the hot. I'm getting hungry. So, yeah. I mean, no specific. I guess just depends on the mood I'm in
and
when
the place
I have them.
And the place you're getting
place,
them.
Yeah.
Because some people have a better sauce than others. I mean, it's just they're all not created equal. Just like pizza.
Right.
You get pizza one way and then you taste something, you know, two doors down and you're like, this isn't pizza. What the heck is this? And
exactly.
So, yeah, I guess it's all depending on your taste and where you're getting it.
That's
but
true.
I'm really hungry, I guess, because I'm just thinking I'm talking about pizza. I'm talking about wings. And, you know, of course, Philly here, cheesesteaks. I don't know. I don't eat those very much anymore, though. I used to for a long time, and then I put on a lot of weight, and then I stopped eating them, and I took off a lot of weight. So I think there's something maybe connected there.
Cheese steaks and weight. Yeah, I mean, that probably has something to do with it.
COVID, that was one of the few places that you could go, and you could because it was outdoors. You wait in line at Pat's or Gino's, and you're not in anywhere. You eat outside. And I just remember going there a lot during COVID. Yeah, I think that's where the COVID pounds came.
Yeah, a lot of people, they to pass time, they eat. I mean, it's and watch got nothing Tiger King.
Oh, I did too. Of course I did. Oh, and I still.
Kobe's the only reason that show's popular.
I want him pardoned. I still am going to make a thing. God. I want him pardoned. I thought Trump would do it in his last day. I know he was, you know, trying to do that and get, you know, and Trump didn't do it. So there's always hope the next time around.
All right. This went off the rails.
This went off the rails. And then I never did watch the sequel, though. Apparently, there was a Tiger King 2, and I
didn't see it either.
No,
I don't know.
It was too much of an emotion.
I probably wouldn't have watched the first one if I wasn't bored because we were all stuck in the house.
It was. And I'll tell you, it just, you would think it can't get any weirder, and it always did. And I don't think a lot of that was made up. I really think this is what that person did in his life. And I think, you know,
I don't doubt it.
They probably dumbed it down for TV because they probably. It was too much, but that's another. Maybe I'll get him someday from live from his jail cell. Maybe we can get Tiger
exclusive.
King. Yes, exclusive. You know, but right now what we do have is an incredible member of the Oak Ridge Boys.
All right, let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. Very few bands can say that they have been touring and recording together for over a half a century. But up next on The Scene with Doreen, my guest has been the very anchor in one of those rare groups. Richard Sturban of the Oak Ridge Boys joined the band in 1972 and has never looked back. The melodious, rich bass singer in the foursome, Rich has delivered some of the most iconic bass vocal lines in all of popular music. Take a listen.
Giddy up.
Oh, yes, American Made, after racking up a whopping 12 gold, 3 platinum, and 1 double platinum album, and more than a dozen national number one singles, and over 30 top 10 hits. Richard Sturban and the Oak Ridge Boys are out one on the road right now for one last time on their American Made Farewell National Tour. Undeniably an American institution, they have inspired countless other artists and opened doors for so many. So it is with great honor that I welcome the anchor of the Oak Ridge Boys, the booming yet earthy bass vocalist, Richard Sturban, to the show. Welcome to The Scene with Doreen. Richard, what's going on?
Well, thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be on your show. I'm looking forward to talking to you and all your fine listeners and viewers out there.
Oh, me too. And I think it's more appropriate to say welcome home, because our show originates right outside of Philadelphia, and you were born right over the river in Camden, New Jersey.
I was born in Camden, New Jersey. You are absolutely correct. And I thought it was very appropriate that I wear my Phillies jersey.
Yes. Matt, our producer, is loving it. He's loving it. And
I go way back. I grew up as a kid going to Connie Mack Stadium.
Oh, yeah.
Watching the Phillies play. So I go way back.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, of course, I had to say, when I think of the birthplace of iconic country singers, immediately my mind goes right to Camden, New Jersey. It's kind of like,
absolutely.
You know, it's kind of
maybe camel soup, you know, but I don't know about country singers.
Well, very tragically, we just lost your bandmate Joe Bonsall on July 9th. But interestingly enough, you both came into the band around the same time, and he too was from the Philly area. It's got to be the cheesesteaks. There's something going on.
Yeah, you're absolutely correct about that. We are both from your area, from your part of the country, and you know, long before any of us, or either of us, I should say, became members of the Oak Ridge Boys, we knew each other. And I used to actually, believe it or not, sell men's clothing in Gimbel's, Gimbel Brothers, department store, the one in Northeast Philadelphia.
Yeah.
And Joe Bonzo would come in and visit me. He would come in and actually occasionally buy a shirt or something from me. And we would always talk about music and talk about singing. And we had no idea back in those days that we'd end up together and have a great long career in the Oak Ridge Boys. It's pretty amazing how things developed in our lives.
It's Juno, didn't you both perform in a group called the Keystones?
That is correct. We helped organize our own group called the Keystones, and we sang, you know, in the northeastern part of the country for many, many years. And then I one day got a phone call from a gentleman named J.D. Sumner.
Oh,
and
yes.
Offered me a job, and which you know, to join his group called the Stamps Quartet.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to move to Nashville. So I left, moved to Nashville, and, you know, I was there for just a short time. And I happened to be in the right place at the right time. And I ended up singing with Elvis, the King of Rock and Roll. So that was also an amazing part of my life as well.
Oh, you have had such a very colorful story around you. And we're going to talk all about Elvis. We're going to talk about even more of the Oak Ridge Boys. But before we get there, I do want to address that I know Joe was struggling with ALS for some time and even stepped away from his duties with the band. But you guys had decades and decades of history. How are you dealing with the loss? How are you doing?
Well, there's no question about it. It's a difficult thing to have to go through. You know, it was something that we all knew was coming. You know, for the last 4 or 5 years, Joe was a trooper. He fought this thing the best he could. Mm. You know, he finally got to the place back in December where he had to inform us that he could not go on any longer, and he had to retire from the road, and he did. Mm. And so we knew this day was coming, you know, but when it finally happened, it was still very difficult to take. Mm-hmm. It's a very emotional thing. Joe was one of a kind. He was a special person, an inspiration, you know, to everyone he came in contact with. And like I say, he fought that disease like a trooper right up until the very end. I'll never forget it. And we miss him dearly. There's no question about it.
Mm, it's family. It's not just bandmates anymore. It's family after all those years.
Well, there's no, you know, I've known Joe, you know, we've been in the Oak Ridge Boys for over 50 years together. And like I say, I knew him before that. So, we were longtime friends, and it was a difficult thing to have to go through. No question about it.
Yes. And, you know, we're going to talk a little bit about your start, because before your memoir, Elvis to Elvira, there was Richard Sturban, soprano to bass. Between 7th and 8th grade, your voice dropped probably, what, 3 octaves? And that's a hard thing for any young singer to deal with, but it's a massive change for you. How did you adjust vocally?
Well, you're right. Well, first of all, you know, the first singing that I ever did, believe it or not, was as a boy soprano.
I know, that's insane.
And I know that's hard to believe, but, you know, I was in church. I was in Sunday school right there in Camden, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll never forget that experience. You know, I don't remember the song that I sang because that was so long ago. But I do remember that experience. And as a young boy of about 6 years old, I felt very impressed that this is what I was meant to do with my life. You know, I dreamed about playing for the Phillies, but I knew that would never happen.
What position would you have been if you were recruited and they got you on the farm team? What would you have played? What position?
Oh, I don't know.
Anywhere.
wherever they could work me in.
Right, know? Right.
No, but I followed my dream. I knew that that was going to be my calling in life. I followed my dream to be a singer. Mm-hmm. And I had a high voice.
Yeah.
Until I got into junior high school, as you mentioned. Mm-hmm. And between 7th grade and 8th grade, my voice made a change. And boy, did it make a drastic change.
Like I said, 3 octaves probably. It had to be, at least.
I went back in the fall for my 8th grade year. The choir teacher, we called it the Glee Club back then.
Oh, yeah. We still do in some schools. We do.
the choir teacher could not believe the difference. And she put me in the second bass section. And obviously, I've been there for since.
Oh, yes. You know, it's interesting, though, with, it would have been more tenor, probably. We would have been called back then. They get a lot of the actual melody line, whereas in you, as a bass, had to do a lot of more of the harmonies and more of the anchor on the bottom.
Right. And really, the foundation, especially in a four-part harmony group like the Oak Ridge Boys, the bass voice has that foundation, usually hits the root of the chord.
Oh, yes.
And holds everybody else up on top.
Oh, absolutely. We can hear it in the montage that I played at the beginning of the show. You hear you. You come out, you know, crisp and clear like a bell right underneath there. And it is. It's that pad underneath that just holds everything else together.
Well, you're right about that. You know, being a bass singer is kind of like being, you know, a role player on a baseball team, really. You know, a bass singer does not get a lot of lead vocals necessarily, but the main job of the bass singer is that provide that solid foundation for the four-part harmony that the Oak Ridge Boys, I might add, are well known for. That's our key signature, the four-part harmony.
Oh, yeah, like in Elvira. I mean, that's probably one of the most iconic bass lines that has ever existed in popular music, and you are the one doing it.
Well, you know, the gentleman that wrote that song, Dallas Frazier, he wrote that line into the song, "Giddy up, on papa, mm-hmm. mow, mow." And on his version of it, you know, it was not a bass voice. But when we got into the recording studio, I'll never forget that day we recorded the song. Our producer back then is a gentleman named Ron Chansey. Mm. It was his idea for me to do that bass, the part and do the giddy up, boom, papa, mow, mow part. Uh-huh. So I just kind of adapted it to my way of doing things. And I think it probably turned out okay. And it's probably probably one of the most well-known bass lines in all of the music business.
So it is.
I'm proud of the way it turned out.
Oh, absolutely. And I know in your memoir, you talk about some of the vocal challenges you've had over the years. You've had to overcome some. What regimens have you had to implement? I mean, we're talking, 50-something years now. What do you do to ensure your vocal health going forward? Because you're still out there performing. You're doing the farewell tour as we speak. So what do you do?
You're correct about that. And, you know, a few years ago, you know, I was having some vocal difficulties. So, we have a great, hospital here in Nashville, Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. And so I went to the Vanderbilt Voice Center there and talked to some of the doctors there and the voice instructors and the vocal coaches. And they kind of coached me through it. And basically they said that, you're getting older. You're not going to sing at your age like you did, 30 or 40 years ago. Right. And so I said, the best thing you can do is just to rest, mm-hmm. and one vocal coach advised me to take a nap before a show every time. So I've kind of tried to do that. And so the best regimen that I do for my voice is on days when I have to sing at night, try not to talk too much, mm-hmm. and try to rest, and take a little nap before the show. And it's kind of worked out okay for me.
Yes, I would say so. And what do you do as a vocalist? Do you do a warm-up? What do you do? Do you, hum?
I've gone to doctors and coaches, and they've shown me a few exercises to do, basically simple stuff. Yeah. But I think the most important thing is just to relax and not overexert yourself on the day that you have to sing.
It's true. A lot of people forget, a guitarist can put his guitar in a case and put it somewhere. A trumpet player puts the trumpet away. A vocalist carries that instrument with them every single place they go. And people don't realize, you can't scream at a baseball game. You can't go out there and do things that are going to hurt your instrument. Whereas a guitar person puts it away and then they go to the baseball game and scream. It doesn't matter.
Well, yeah, and you're right about that. We've already talked about the fact that I'm a big baseball
yes,
fan.
Yes, you are.
Even here in Nashville, I'm a big Vanderbilt fan. I go to the Vandy games. Mm-hmm. And we have our Nashville Sounds AAA team here that I used to be a part owner of. Mm-hmm. I go to a lot of baseball games, but I've learned to just sit and enjoy the game and maybe wave my hand like that. But I don't scream because that's a very important thing.
Now, you have that voice, even speaking. You do color commentary, too, at some of the games? Do you call the games?
Well, I've dabbled at that just a little bit. I've done some voiceovers in the past.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
And I may do more of that in the future, and I've actually, I told you I used to be a part owner of the Nashville Sounds. Mm-hmm. And on several occasions, I have actually sat in with the broadcaster and done some color commentary on the games. Also at Vanderbilt. I've done Vanderbilt baseball games as well. So it's a little hobby of mine that I kind of dabble with on the side just a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, you're perfect for it. I mean, you have the two right there, the voice and your knowledge of the game. It's a perfect marriage.
You're right about that. And once again, speaking about the Phillies, they are having a great year.
Oh, yeah. Now that you say that, you're going to jinx us. But yes, they are.
And you know what? Let me just say this. Joe, we talked about Joe passing away just mm-hmm. recently. And I tried to talk to Joe, here in the last few months. And the fact that the Phillies were doing so well really kind of helped him and inspired him in the last few months of his life, because he had the baseball package on his TV and he watched the Phillies every day. And so I would talk to him about it. And you can tell when we brought the Phillies up, it put a little spark in him and gave him a little lift for the day. So it was a good thing.
Beautiful story. I know some of the people that are on, you know, that actually, I know someone very close that owns part of the team. I want to share that story. I did not know that. And I think that's a beautiful story to share. And I hope you don't mind, but I would love to share that with them.
Yeah, well, that's great. Yeah, I'd love for you to do that. And, you know, it was a real honor, especially for Joe, when the Phillies played, you know, they paid tribute to Joe the day he died. You know, they had a moment of silence. And, you know, Joe actually got to know John Kruk pretty well. And they would, you know, text back and forth all the time. And I have a feeling John Kruk had something to do with it. But it was a great tribute the Phillies paid to Joe Bonsall that night.
I am so glad. And very deserving. I mean, just an iconic singer over the years. And, you know, there is an interesting story about you, though, where you had a record producer that nearly ruined your singing career.
Well, I don't know about that. I'm not sure I know what
you don't know. There was something on your website about a record producer that nearly, it's in your memoir, that really nearly, well, we won't talk about that then.
we can talk about that. And I won't even mention the gentleman's name.
We can be incognito.
well-known producer here in Nashville. You know, when we decided we wanted him to produce the Oak Ridge Boys, he wanted to take time and talk to all four of us. And so we all sat down with him individually and talked with him. And he basically just told me that, you know, you are a bass singer and you're not going to really have any lead vocals on the record that I'm going to produce. You're going to be strictly a role player. And I was willing to accept that. So I don't know that he ruined my career, but it just made me realize, you know, the real true role of a bass singer. And I think, you know, that I had no problem with that whatsoever.
Oh, that's, well, you know, it takes all different types. There's always, like, in a band, there's the lead singer, and then there's someone else who does maybe, you know, keyboards. And they all take on different roles, but together they make what the package is, and everyone takes their part, like on a team, like on a baseball team. Everybody, the shortstop is not going to do the same thing as first base, but together they make a great team.
You're absolutely correct. You know, now one thing we've done as the Oak Ridge Boys, four-part harmony is our signature. There's no question about it.
Yes.
But every member of our group has had a lead vocal on a hit record. Even me, believe it or not. So we've tried to, you know, while Dwayne Allen is our main lead singer, he's sung the lead vocals on most of our hit songs. Every other member of the group also has had lead vocals as well. So we'll always try to do that, because we feel like when our fans come to see us, they want to hear all four of us sing. And so we've been able to do that over the years.
I like that everyone has their moment to shine, and then you go back and you do support, and then you go out to do lead. I love that kind of ebb and flow of the group. And I think that's part of what you guys are really family. I keep bringing that back, but, you know, a lot of people, they work in a band and they do their thing, or they're in a group. But you guys, I mean, think about it, half a century, you've become family.
You're no question about it. We are in many ways closer than brothers. And, you know, I think that's one of the reasons, you know, people quite often ask, what is the reason for your longevity? How have you guys been able to last?
Yeah, what's
so
the glue that holds it together? Yeah.
And I think there's several reasons for that. First and foremost, we love doing what we do.
Yeah.
And we don't want it to end. We really don't. But I think the relationship that exists between the four of us is very, very special. You know, each guy in our group is different.
Yeah.
Each guy brings something different to the table, so to speak. But I think that's a big part of our appeal. And I think we learned a long time ago to accept that difference. And I think we realized a long time ago that we need each other. So we pull together as a team. You know, we're a true brotherhood. And over the years, we become the very, very best of friends. And we travel together all on the same bus. We actually like each other. And that's a good thing to do.
That helps. Yeah. It's very hard to create. I mean, people do it all the time. And you hear about all the stories where they can create this beautiful piece of work, but they hate each other. And you hear about all the, you know, the bickerings. But it's really, it does shine through when people genuinely like each other and they create together.
Well, you're right about that. So that's once again, there are several factors that are key to the Oak Ridge Boys' longevity. But that relationship, that friendship, that bond that we have between the four of us is very special.
And I did read somewhere that you think you're the worst singer in the Oak Ridge Boys, that you have this sort of self-confidence issue deep down. And do you feel that some of the insecurity comes from these challenges you've had to overcome? I mean, it's so weird to drop three octaves over the course of a summer and all of these other things, you know, playing the, you know, learning what a bass role really does. How can you possibly? I want to say this, but do you hear yourself? Of course, you're not you're an amazing singer.
Well, you know, I think it's natural. I think most people don't feel like they quite measure up to the standard that they've set for themselves. Right. And I think I'm that way, certainly. You know, every time I hear my voice played back, I listen, wow, I think maybe I could have done that better, you know. But I think over the course of the years, obviously, I've been good enough to have some success in this business, as all four of us have. So you know, I think it's just human nature sometimes to like doubt yourself a little bit. But I think overall, when I look back on 52 years as a member of the Oak Ridge Boys and 7 or 8 years before that singing with the Keystone Quartet, I think overall things have turned out okay.
Yes, and I am chatting with Basso Profondo, Richard Sturban of the Oak Ridge Boys. When we come back, we talk about singing backup for one of the most iconic singers of all time and so much more. Stay tuned because we're going to be right back. Are you or someone you love facing a serious or terminal illness? Since 2009, Wish Upon a Wedding has been here to help grant your dream wedding or vow renewal. A nationwide charity, we are dedicated to creating an unforgettable day of love and hope for couples during this most difficult time. If you're ready to celebrate love but need a little help, visit wishuponawedding.org and apply. Let us bring joy and magic to your special love story. That's wishuponawedding.org. Apply now and let love shine through.
No more mold. No more damage. No more outdated old bathroom. No more slipping and hurting. No more stress. Make your ordinary bathroom extraordinary for only $99 per month. New shower, new door, new tub, new wall, new anti-slip technology. Be stress-free. Call 800-827-4067. BCI Bath and Shower is made in America for the highest quality. Ask about our military and senior discounts. Your dream bathroom in as little as one day. First 50 callers save $1,500 on a never-clear glass treated door. Call now for free premium color upgrades. 800-827-4067. Call BCI Bath and Shower, the leader in bathroom remodeling. Be smart, safe, and stay a step ahead of inflation with our interest-free financing options. Call 800-827-4067. Love your bathroom with free upgrades. Call 800-827-4067. 800-827-4067.
I am tired and I need my strength and power to guide me over. Just open my eyes that I may see. Lead me, O Lord, won't you leave me?
That's right.
Lead me, O Lord, won't you leave me?
Welcome back to The Scene with Doreen. I am your host, Doreen Taylor, and I have the pleasure of chatting with Grammy, ACM, and CMA winning bass singer of the Oak Ridge Boys, Richard Sturban. But before there was the Oak Ridge Boys, Richard sang backup for the king himself, Mr. Elvis Presley. And that was just a little clip from the 1972 concert film, Elvis on Tour, featuring Richard's vocals. Welcome back to the show, Richard.
Well, thank you, Doreen. It's a pleasure to be back. And listening to that, you talk about bringing back some great memories. Oh, listening to me actually singing with the king of rock and roll.
Oh, yeah.
A special time in my life, no question about it.
I've listened to countless interviews where you talk about your time singing backup with Elvis. But what I haven't heard much is about the last time you and Elvis were together in 1975 as you were leaving to join the Oak Ridge Boys. What did he say to you at that last moment?
Well, when I left, Elvis, I got a call from the Oak Ridge Boys. Actually, it was a phone call that really, really changed my life. William Lee Golden called me and said the bass singer in the Oak Ridge Boys was leaving, and would I be interested in taking the job? And I really believed in what the Oak Ridge Boys were doing, and I really felt like the group had a great deal of potential, and I wanted to be a part of it. So, but it involved me having to leave Elvis, and that was a difficult thing to do. And and back when I left Elvis and joined the Oak Ridge Boys, a lot of people questioned that decision. How could you do that? But I really believed I was doing the right thing. But getting to back to what you were asking me about, not too long after I joined the Oak Ridge Boys, we were actually playing in Las Vegas at a place called the Landmark Hotel, which is no longer there. Right across the road from the Las Vegas Hilton, which is still there. And Elvis was playing there. The other guys in the group had never met Elvis before, and they wanted to know if I could arrange for them to go over there and at least meet Elvis and say hi to him. So I called over there, talked to, Charlie Hodge, I think, or some of my friends, from my days of working with Elvis. They arranged for the Oak Ridge Boys to come over there and come down to Elvis's dressing room and meet him. And I'll never forget that day. The other three Oak Ridge Boys, they experienced the thing that I experienced a few years ago. The first time you ever meet Elvis is something you will never ever forget. And their jaws dropped. Wow, this is actually Elvis. But while we were all there talking, Elvis kind of pulled me aside, and he said, and this was a real compliment. He said, "Do you think there's any way I could get you to come back?" And I said, "Elvis, I appreciate that. That is a tremendous compliment. But I think I'm where I need to be. I think I'm in the right place here with the Oak Ridge Boys. I think I'm going to stay, with what I'm doing. And I think I made the right decision now that I look back, for over 50 years of a great career." But it was a little bit of a difficult thing at the time. But I told him I think I did the right thing. But it was a tremendous compliment. There's no doubt about it.
You had to really take quite the leap of faith to do this. I mean, like you said, a lot of people say, "Are you crazy? You're leaving the king." But you really followed your heart, and that is something that should be very
That's a
admired.
great way to put it. You see, I followed my heart, and you're right about that. And back then, when I was a young guy in my 20s, singing on stage with Elvis, I had no inclination. I had no idea that someday I would be in the same Hall of Fame with Elvis. If you go into the Country Music Hall of Fame now here in Nashville,
Yes, you are.
go go
Congratulations.
go, go into the Rotunda, which is such a special place. You'll see the four faces of the Oak Ridge Boys on the wall in bronze. Then you look around the room, right down the wall a little ways, you'll see Elvis, in bronze. Also, Johnny Cash, Dolly Parton, Kenny Rogers, the list goes on and on and on and on. And so to be a member of that Country Music Hall of Fame is an honor that's really beyond words. But back then, I had no idea it would someday happen, and you never know how things will work out in your life. And I think once again, that indicates that back then when I left Elvis to join the Oak Ridge Boys, I made a pretty good decision.
Oh, amen. Did you ever? Now, that last conversation, that thing that he said to you in Las Vegas, after that point, did your paths ever cross again?
I don't, I think that was probably the last time I ever saw Elvis in person, was to actually talk to him and speak with him. Yes.
Now, do you remember the day that Elvis died? How did you find out?
I do remember the day Elvis died. Believe it or not, it was back in the days when we were kind of in our struggling time with the Oak Ridge Boys. We had not had any hit records yet, and we all had to wear different hats, so to speak. One of my jobs back then was to kind of take care of the bus that we were traveling in, and I happened to be taking our bus to the General Tire dealership right in a place called Gallatin, Tennessee, neighboring town to Hendersonville, where I live right now, actually where I'm talking to you from right now. And I was putting new tires on the bus when I got a phone call that informed me that Elvis passed away. I'll never forget that. It was something that I was so unexpected. And I'll never forget that. And I think everyone kind of will tell you a similar story. They'll remember where they were, the day that that Elvis died, because it's the biggest star in the world passing away is something that's you know, hard to accept and it's something that's it's hard to live with, but I'll never forget that day.
Right. You have your TCB necklace that he gave you, and you also have a gold watch. I heard you have quite a nice gold watch, too.
Yeah, I have that stashed away somewhere as well.
Oh, yes.
I'll never forget the day Elvis, you know, gave it to us. He said, I think he said something to the effect like, welcome to the mafia or something like that. Welcome to his organization or something.
All right, you're a made man now.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I want you to tell the story because I know it, but I don't think my listeners do. And you talked about Elvis being quite the prankster, and you got to see him in a light that a lot of people never got to see. And there happened to be quite a story involved with a gun. I heard that he kind of was quite the little prankster.
Well, you're right. Elvis loved to play practical jokes. No question about it. It was one of his favorite things to do. And I remember when we were working with Elvis in Las Vegas, and back in those days, Elvis, he actually did two shows every night.
Wow.
He did an 8 o'clock show and then a midnight show. And I remember one day we were doing, one night, we after our first show, we were in the dressing room. Changing clothes, going to relax for a few hours before we had to go do the next show. And Elvis came walking into our dressing room, something he had never, ever done before.
Mm-hmm.
And we turned around and we looked at each other and said, wow, what's going on? He proceeded to tell us that, you know, there's been a threat on his life. He says, now, this stuff like this has happened before. He said, we really feel like this may be the real thing this time.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'm going to go up to my room up at the top of the suite he had at the top of the Hilton. He says, I want you guys to come up there in a few minutes. And Sonny and Red, his two bodyguards and the security guards at the hotel, they want to have a meeting with you guys and talk about how we want to approach this on the second show. So we said, wow, this could be pretty serious.
Mm.
I remember going up to the elevator and the four of us went up there. We got off the elevator at the top floor. We were knocked, you know, on the door of Elvis's suite. They opened the door. We walked into the suite, and Elvis was kind of standing there, plunking on the piano a little bit. And he said, come on, fellas, I want to talk to you. He said, we feel like this is a real, there's been stuff like this happening to us before. There's been threats on my life. But he said, we feel like this is the real thing this time. And he said, and so Sonny and Red start telling us, we want you guys, when we're on stage, to look out into the audience. If you see anyone that happens to look suspicious, tell either Sonny or Red, we're going to be on either side of the stage, tell us that you see someone.
Mm-hmm.
While they're explaining this to us, all of a sudden the door of the suite opened and some guy yells, Presley, I'm going to get you. And bang, he has a gun. He starts firing at Elvis. Mm-hmm. Elvis dove under... he dove down onto the floor. Security guards, they all pulled out their guns. They started shooting back at this guy. We all scrambled. I dove under a table. I start praying, oh, dear Lord, don't
You're
let
right.
me die.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And J.D. Sumner jumped on top of Elvis to try to protect Elvis. And that's when we knew that this was a joke because Elvis was laughing so hard. He could, and so we all realized it was a joke, but it was such a real joke. I never had something, a joke like that played on me quite like that. I remember about the second show that night, by midnight, I was still shook up on stage.
It was so real.
And Elvis kept looking at us the whole show laughing. He got such a big kick out of that. It was pretty amazing.
So how many years do you think that took off of your life, that experience?
I remember diving under a table. I hit my head.
Oh, my God. You could have had a concussion.
I was praying, dear Lord, don't let me die.
Oh, my gosh. Well, that just kind of sums up Elvis's sense of humor. I've heard stories and I've had other people on the show that have worked with him. But that one takes the cake. That is probably his pièce de résistance of his life, of his pranks.
It's going to be hard for the rest of my life, however many years I have left, for someone to play a joke on me any better than that.
Well, and also it's like the boy who cried wolf now. You're never, you know, God forbid, while you're working with him, if something real, real did happen along the lines, whatever, you'd have been like, ha ha, yeah, okay, funny man. And he's really like, you know, something happened, you know. You can't do that too many times and fool people too many times. They won't believe you.
You're right about that, sir.
So just to kind of wrap up your time, you did get to see him in a light that very few people do. What do you take away from your time with Elvis? If you had one thing that you would pass on to others that really is just that one thing that you remember or you keep in your heart, what would it have been of Elvis?
There's a reason why he was the biggest star in the world. And even today, you know, 50 years after he passed away, he's still a big star. No question about it. Because every time he walked on stage, he gave it everything he had. You know, he was, you know, every person in that audience was important to him. Mm-hmm. And I tried to adopt that philosophy myself in my career with the Oak Ridge Boys. We have as a group, and I think that's one of the reasons we've had a career that has lasted over 50 years, because we feel the very same way. But he was a special person, and he always gave it everything he had every night, every minute he was on that stage.
It's beautiful. I'm chatting with Richard Sturban, the vocal anchor of the Oak Ridge Boys. When we come back, we talk about another very special bond with the former commander-in-chief, his passions outside of music, and what the incredible singer has on tap next. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Imagine giving the gift of a dream wedding or vow renewal to a couple facing serious or terminal illness. That's what Wish Upon a Wedding does every day. Across the U.S., Wish Upon a Wedding creates unforgettable moments of joy and love by granting wedding and vow renewal wishes during difficult times. We can't do it without your help, though. Visit wishuponawedding.org and click the donate link to make a one-time or monthly gift to this amazing charity. Your support makes a world of difference. That's wishuponawedding.org. Because love and hope deserve to be celebrated.
A careless driver can change your life in an instant. Do you know what to do or who to call? If you've been injured in a motor vehicle accident and do not have an attorney, call Auto Accident Help Desk for a free consultation. We can answer all of your questions and estimate the potential value of your case. Call Auto Accident Help Desk and connect with an expert personal injury attorney.
Call 800-320-9428. 800-320-9428.
Don't worry how to handle your medical bills, lost wages, and pain. We will get you the money you deserve.
They got me way more than the insurance company offered.
The consultation is free, and you do not pay any legal fees unless we win or settle your case. Make the smart call. If you've been injured in an auto accident, call Auto Accident Help Desk for a free legal consultation.
Call 800-320-9428. 800-320-9428. 800-320-9428.
We first sang for him in October of 1983 on the lawn of the White House when he was vice president, and he said, "Fellas," he always called us fellas, "would you sing me a few songs? I'm a big fan." For decades, we have sang for him. And this is, a real honor to be here. What a lot of people may not know is he fancied himself to be a good bass singer. He was not. We'll sing for our president.
Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. Was blind, but now I see.
Welcome back to The Scene with Doreen. I am your host, Doreen Taylor, and I have been chatting with a very talented bass singer of the Oak Ridge Boys, Richard Sturban. Coming out of the break, I played the Oak Ridge Boys performing Amazing Grace at the funeral of George H.W. Bush. You guys had a very special bond with the president, didn't you?
There's no question about it. And Joe, you were playing Joe talking there, you know, before we sang Amazing Grace, and he talked about that day that we first met George Bush. You know, Ronald Reagan was the president of the United States back then. Mm-hmm. And he invited the Oak Ridge Boys to sing at what they called the Congressional Barbecue on the lawn of the White House. Mm-hmm. And that day we were doing a sound check on the stage that they had set up there on the lawn of the White House. And while we were there rehearsing, this tall gentleman came walking across the lawn. He came up on the stage. He introduced himself as Vice President George Bush. He did not have to do that. We knew exactly who he was.
Right.
But as Joe said there, as you heard him a minute ago, he called his fellows, right? He said, "Fellows, I cannot be at the concert tonight." He had to go on some vice presidential business. Mm-hmm. And he said, "Would you guys be willing to sing a few songs for me right here, right now?" And we said, "Sure, Mr. Vice President. What would you like to hear?" Mm-hmm. And that's when we realized he was telling us the truth. He was a big fan because mm-hmm. he named songs that were not necessarily hits. Of course, he wanted to hear Elvira.
Oh, of course, of
but
course.
He wanted to hear these album cuts, these deep cuts. So we realized he was telling us the truth. That afternoon, on there on the lawn of the White House, we proceeded to give him a mini concert right there, his own personal concert.
Wow.
That afternoon, we established a friendship with him that lasted until he passed away. And we got to know him very well. We got to know his wonderful wife, Barbara. Mm-hmm. It had very little of anything to do with politics. It was friendship. That was the most important thing.
Right.
We sang for him every time we had a chance, many events while he was in the White House. After he left the White House, the four of us and our wives, we'd go to Kennebunkport, Maine every summer.
Wow.
Kind of hang out with him, go fishing with him. And of course, we always had to do mini concerts in his living room. That was the law. You know, had to
that
do
was
that.
The trade-off.
and he would invite the neighbors over, you know, and it was a special time. There were memories that are priceless. There's no question about
it. Yes. You know,
many times we'd sing for him. And he always requested his favorite song every time we sang.
Yeah.
That was Amazing Grace.
Oh.
And not too long before he passed away, he asked us if we would sing Amazing Grace at his funeral. And we said, "Sure, Mr. President, you can count on us.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever we are, we will be there."
Mm-hmm.
We had no idea now we were going to be in Spokane, Washington.
Yeah.
We were there doing a Christmas show.
Wow.
And after the Christmas show, we had to go directly to the airport, get on a private jet that was donated to us by a very dear friend, flew to Houston. We did the national anthem there that morning, you know, at the funeral, a very emotional experience, no question about it. After the funeral, got back on the jet, flew back to Kennewick, Washington, did another Christmas show. All of that in 24 hours, no sleep. We did not miss a date in the process. But most importantly, the most important thing, we kept our promise to President Bush, and we sang Amazing Grace at his funeral. He always taught us to do the right thing, and we knew that was the right thing to do. It's a memory that I think we'll all take with us until our dying day as well.
Mm. Now, how many times do you think in total you performed for presidents, past or present?
Oh, I the first president I think we ever performed for, believe it or not, was Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan. The list goes on down.
Right, you know, you've done many.
Many times. There's no question about it.
What is your favorite, besides that first time meeting George Bush? What was your favorite memory, though, performance-wise? What was your favorite time you ever just performed for one of the presidents?
Well, I just happened to think of and Joe mentioned on his little talk a minute ago as well, something that, you know, and I was thinking about it just the last night or so, watching the Republican convention on TV.
Oh, yes.
We sang at the Republican convention the year George Bush accepted the nomination.
Oh, wow.
And I'll never forget. At the end of the night, we all got on stage together with George Bush and Barbara Bush and all the people that were there at the convention then. And we all sang God Bless America together. Mm-hmm. And George Bush came over. He stood next to me and started singing bass in my ear to let me know that he could sing bass as well. But I was glad that he was going to be the president and not a fellow bass singer.
Really? So I gather it was not anything to write home about. Oh, what a wonderful memories. And it's really touching to know that besides politics, it doesn't matter what you believe, that a good person is a good person. And it became a friendship and family.
They were, you know, they were wonderful people, you know, whether you believe in the things that he did as a president or not, he was a man of character. There's no question about that. He was a special man. And his wonderful wife, Barbara, you know, she's the kind of lady that everyone would want as a grandmother. You know, they were just special people, and we were honored to call them friends. We certainly were.
I wish we could go back in time. Just saying, that's my own personal opinion, but we need a little more of that today. I just, you know, I miss a lot of that.
There's no doubt about it. I agree with you.
No, on a different topic, totally like off the beaten path here. But I've watched a lot of your videos performing over the years, and you have some style. And I learned that that's not just a fluke. You actually have a genuine passion for fashion.
Well, you're right. You know, and I mentioned very early on in our interview that Joe and I knew each other before we became members of the Oak Ridge Boys. Mm-hmm. And I actually used to sell men's clothing at Gimbel Brothers. And I think that job that I had back then kind of helped inspire my love for clothing. Mm-hmm. You know, and I carried that with me after I, you know, became a member of the Oak Ridge Boys. And, you know, I used to go on shopping sprees in New York and buy stage clothes. I actually paid a gentleman to be my fashion designer and pick out stage outfits for me. And I think, you know, I became known as the guy that wore all the fancy clothes with the Oak Ridge Boys, along with the guy that had the low voice, of course.
You know, of course. They go hand in hand.
So that was kind of a thing of mine, and I enjoyed kind of, you know, playing around with that. It was something that I enjoyed doing.
Oh, it's so fun. And I like that you have that. You have a lot of passions, and I know that you've written a lot about it and talked a lot about it in your memoir, and people need to pick it up because you have a lot of things, like, you know, the Weather Channel. You like weather. You are part owner of the Nashville Sounds. I mean, there are so many things, and yet we're running out of time with you. So I want people to read about it, though, because you are quite the character, and you're wonderfully charming. But before we do all that, I do want to say that you are returning to the recording studios yet again, Dave Cobb, and you are going to release your new next highly anticipated studio album in the fall. How's that going?
Well, the album is complete. We've already been in the studio. We have a young gentleman that has taken Joe's place. His name is Ben James, mm-hmm. and we've recorded a new album with Ben. Ben was personally handpicked by Joe. When Joe realized that he couldn't go on, he wanted Ben to take his place. And now we're doing our farewell tour with Ben James, and we have a new album that'll be coming out in the fall. The title of the album is called Mama Boys, mm-hmm. and as you mentioned, it's produced by Dave Cobb, where Dave Cobb has now produced the last five albums on the Oak Ridge Boys. Great. If you know anything about the music scene here in Nashville, Dave Cobb is one of the hottest guys here in Nashville, and we're honored that he's actually producing the Oak Ridge Boys. He's a special man, and he worked together. We've worked together with Ben, and we're happy the way that it turned out. As I said, it's called Mama's Boys. It'll be out this fall, and something that Oak Ridge Boys fans can look forward to. No doubt about it.
Oh, we are. And I do not want to let you go without making mention of the American Made Farewell Tour. You're in the process of it. You're all over. But I do want to give a shout out. Camden, New Jersey, your hometown. So you're going to be here near it on July 31st at the Ocean City Pier in New Jersey. And on August 2nd, you're going to be at the Keswick Theater in Glenside, PA. But the train doesn't stop there. You're going all over until December with tour dates all over the country. But if anyone wants to find out tour dates, info, purchase autographed copies of the memoir Elvis to Elvira, visit richardsturban.com and also visit the Oak Ridge Boys. .com, and they can find out everything, buy tickets, support these wonderful gentlemen who have been not only making music all these years, but truly are showing us what a bond can truly be, a family bond and love for what you do. And we love what you do.
Well, let me just say this, you know, I always look forward to coming to the Northeast. You know, as a kid, I grew up going to the Jersey Shore. It's my favorite thing to do in the summertime. So I'm looking forward to playing in Ocean City. And then, of course, I've always loved the Philadelphia area, the Keswick Theater. We've been there before. So I can speak for all the Oak Ridge Boys. And I can tell you, we're looking forward to coming your way. We plan to have a great time. We're going to make it a great night. Come on out, spend some time with the Oak Ridge Boys. It's going to be a celebration. We're going to celebrate the great career that we've been able to have. come on out and celebrate with us together, because we're going to have a great time, as I said.
Yes, and I had a great time today chatting with you, Richard Sturban. You are an icon, and I love your bass lines. And like I said, there's not a person alive that probably hasn't heard one of them somewhere along the line. And just keep doing what you're doing. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
And let me just say, we plan to do that. You know, we are on our farewell tour. And what we want to do, we want to take as much time that it's going to take to go around the country to as many places as we can go and say thank you to our fans. Thank you to people who have allowed us to have such a great career. And not just our fans, but people like yourself who have, you know, promoted the Oak Ridge Boys, people in radio that have played our records. We want to say thank you to as many people as possible. We do not know how long that's going to take. You know, we originally were talking about just doing it to the end of this year. We're now booking dates next year. So we're still going to be around for a while. So good Lord has not told us yet it's time to hang up for good. Until he says that, we're still going to be around for a little while. So come on on, sis. We plan to have a great time.
Awesome. Thank you so much for spending some time. Richard Sturban, everyone. And thank you very much for being here today on The Scene with Doreen.
Thank you so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
Thank you to my guest today, Richard Sturban, and thank you again for tuning in to The Scene with Doreen. I'm here each and every week across the country bringing you the best interviews from the entertainment world and beyond. Get connected with me on social media and on our official website, thescenewithdoreen.com. And make sure to tune in next week so you can find out what's going on. Bye.